good to go. You can get people out, and he looked really good last night.
I know you have Steve Stone straight ahead, who is always insightful on Dane Dunning, the White Sox, etc. A couple of interesting baseball teams in Chicago looking at a weekend showdown. Lawrence, we'll be listening.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Dan. And you can listen to Dan every day between 9 and noon. You are listening to WSCR Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. And this hour is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number 4, KIDS. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Steve Stone.
He didn't want to have Harry call him Michael Jackson.
And Lawrence Holmes.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
Color analyst for the White Sox, Steve Stone, joins Lawrence Holmes.
Lawrence, there's something called the arrogance of performance. If you're a performer in whatever it is in your life where you're performing, you have to have the arrogance to perform.
You don't want to use a foreign substance.
No.
So KY jelly made right here in the United States is probably the best thing you can use.
Social media god Steve Stone and Lawrence Holmes, right now on The Score.
Perfect way to start off the show today. Joining me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Oh, Alpamonte Ford, you can find 500 new and used vehicles there at Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park or alpamonteford.com. Is White Sox color analyst, Score senior baseball analyst, Steve Stone, joining me here on The Score. Stoney, good morning. How are you, sir?
Just terrific. I mean, the Sox are hot. The weather is gorgeous. You've got the Wintrust Crosstown Series this weekend with the Cubs. And I think exciting times are afoot, Lawrence.
I think so, too. I really enjoyed last night's game. And while you and Jason were talking about like how well the game was played, I just kind of enjoyed all of it. So I wanted to talk to you about Dane Dunning and what you thought of his performance last night.
I thought his performance was absolutely wonderful when you consider everything that he's gone through to get to this point. And, you know, I do a lot of tweeting these days because I think it's personally important to stay connected to the fans at a time when they can't get to the ballpark, see the games on their own. I don't want them to feel all that distance from a game that's been so much a part of their life for a long time. And they were all tweeting about how could you possibly send down Dunning for Delmonico? I mean, why make that move after the outing? Well, if the people were paying attention last night, if they did watch the game, they will remember the exact moment when I said his arm is losing something. He doesn't have right here what he had the first three innings. You could tell because that control that put the ball on the corners and threw it wherever he wanted to early suddenly started to desert him, and he is a guy with great control. But you could see it flatten out. I mean, look, I'm the product of a lot of years and a lot of games, and I pretty much recognize, actually with both pitchers, as a matter of fact, with Mize also, I recognize the moment when that stuff started to flatten out, when the arm lost the elasticity, when they started to labor a bit, and it's understanding with Dane Dunning. So the people that wonder why he's being sent down, we saw last night, quite frankly, the arm is not quite ready yet to pitch in rotation in major league games that are meaningful and to continue to have that kind of stuff. And what they want to do is, this is to protect him. This is to get him away from the pressure and the rigors and the stress and the strain of going in rotation every fifth day. They don't want that for him because he's too valuable looking forward. If he can harness, and I think he will, harness the stuff that he showed in the first three and a third innings, I think you've got yourself a rotation guy, probably middle of the rotation guy. That stuff will play anywhere. Same thing with Mize. He ran into the same thing. They both threw 4 1/3 innings. They both struck out 7. Dunning walked 1. Mize didn't walk anybody. One guy gave up one more hit than the other guy. So the performances were absolutely identical. But you can't equate the path that both of them took there. Mize didn't have Tommy John surgery. He hadn't laid off for I don't know how many months between actually pitching in a game that meant something and then going out to a major league start. So Mize is ahead physically, yet they both hit the wall at almost the same time. This is just the Sox way of taking a very valuable asset to this team and trying to protect Dane Dunning as much as possible.
How do you imagine that the White Sox are going to help bring along Dunning inside the season and also be able to help themselves? Like, how do you go about doing that with there not being a minor league for him to kind of stretch out?
Well, nobody can tell you exactly how he came out of the game yesterday. They might not even know right now. You might not know till tomorrow when he has a throw day on the sidelines. So if you can tell me definitively how he came out of this performance and how strong the arm is and how sharp that stuff is going to be, I could then give you a timetable. But the White Sox can't and I can't. We don't know and won't know. And that's one of the reasons why they decided to get him out of the major league pressure and, you know, see what's going to happen moving forward. But so, you know, you do know, you could recognize in looking at his stuff that you've got the makings right now of a rotation that's going to be the envy of many next year. Let's assume Giolito comes back 100% of what he was last year. Let's assume that Dylan Cease, who is 4-1, by the way. I mean, the White Sox team is 3 games over .500, and Dylan Cease is 3 games over .500. He is the over .500 for the White Sox. This is still a young kid. He's 24 years old. I mean, this is a kid who has a chance to be really good and is off to a great start. So let's look at Giolito, Keuchel, who you know is going to come back and be what he is. He's just a keep-you-in-the-game, everyday guy who doesn't beat himself. Then you put in Cease. Then you bring back Kopech, who's going to be 100% when he comes back next year. And then you add Dunning to the mix with the possibility of Rodon, if he gets healthy. You've got yourself 6 different candidates for 5 spots, and you've got yourself a very solid and, just as importantly, a very young rotation. So to me, pitching is in great shape as far as the starters are concerned. And I think we've seen with the emergence of all of these arms out of the bullpen, these guys have a chance to be something special next year. They're much better this year than they were last, and they're going to be much better next year than they are this year. So for those who want the finished product this year, guess what? Not going to happen. It probably will happen somewhere in the middle of next season, depending on acquisitions, depending on going out and getting a free agent, depending on how the White Sox are going to scout their own organization. You've got to make a determination right now. As we're speaking, Lawrence, that determination is going on right now. You have to figure out who's going to be in your rearview mirror as a player and who's going to be a part of your future. If you see this guy in your rearview mirror, that's the guy you have to go out and make a trade and bring somebody in who's really going to help you. Then you look at the free agent market, and there's a lot of guys that are very valuable. I mean, people want Marcus Stroman. They think he would fit really well. To me, he's 4 games over .500. To me, that you look at the other numbers and you say to yourself, well, you know, he's a pretty decent pitcher. But he's making $7.4 million, and next year as a free agent, he's going to want 15 for 5. He's going to want $75 million. Is that money better spent somewhere else if you got 6 candidates already for the rotation? My answer would be absolutely. I mean, Nomar Mazara is here on a 1-year deal, and Encarnacion here on a 1-year deal. You get yourself 1 or 2 left-hand difference makers, I mean consequential, run-producing left-hand hitters, and suddenly you've got tremendous balance in a lineup that's shown a whole lot of thunder right now.
I was really intrigued when you were talking about the idea last night on the broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago. I was actually watching outside on the My Teams app, by the way, Stoney. I figured out I got myself a drop station.
Way to go. Lawrence, I tell you what, you're a tech wizard.
And I was watching it off of a projector. It was actually really cool last night. So I'm sitting out there and I'm listening to you talk about the idea of 2 pitching coaches. And I was like, that actually makes sense. So I wanted to give you a little bit of space to discuss why you think that's something that a forward-thinking team might pull off over the next couple of years.
Okay, so let's look at the current pitching coaches and what they have to be. A current pitching coach, to be effective, has to be 1/3 mechanic, 1/3 psychologist, and 1/3 father confessor. hey, son, I know you're going through some tough times. Tell me what's going on in your life. I'm interested in you as the person, not just you as the pitcher. What can we do to smooth this out, to get you better so you can focus on the mound? Okay, well, that's good. But this game now, with the various added numbers and ways to quantify what a pitcher is doing, Rapsodo and the way to pitch the pitch, show you how much spin you're getting on each and every one of your pitches or lack thereof, that's becoming all-consuming to the average pitching coach who wants to work there. There's some wonderful pitching coaches. Don Cooper has been great for a long time. And I'm not telling you that he's not doing a good job. What I'm telling you is he could do a better job if you take away the psychologist and you take away the father confessor from his job description. Let one guy, not necessarily Don Cooper, I'm not talking specifics here. What I'm telling you is the forward-thinking team is going to say, I want one guy to be my mechanic. Something goes wrong, you go to a good mechanic, tunes your car up, he works with the carburetor, deals with the timing, does whatever he has to do, and suddenly your car's back on the road and it's purring. But unfortunately, we are not cars. We have five senses. We have a mind that governs what we do physically. And to get to that, you need somebody who is skilled. My preference would be a very aware former pitcher who understands the psychology of the game and understands how to maximize the psychology in knowing where you have to go to turn a light on. For instance, Sandy Koufax, who was the best or one of the best this game has ever seen, said he had his great stuff 25% of the time. He had to learn how to win with less than his best 75% of the game. This is a Hall of Famer. So if he only has his great stuff 25%, the 75% you have to maximize, how do you do that? You do that by a series of mental processings. You use imagery. You use creative visualization. You use all of the tricks. You try to use self-hypnosis. And I went to hypnotists when I was pitching, but I found that I didn't want to trust my subconscious with anybody else. The only person I trust my subconscious with was me. So I took the tenets of hypnosis, boiled them down, used them on myself, got together and figured out a way to get to my subconscious to reprogram exactly what I wanted to do. Think of your consciousness as a blackboard that everything you hear, everything said about you, every negative article, every coach that said you can't do it, and here's the reason why, is printed on the blackboard that is your subconscious. The job then is to reach in, erase the blackboard, and every day reaffirm that with positive affirmations. Write down that today you're going to be the best you've ever been. You're going to have the most energy you ever had. You're going to have your concentration rise commensurate with the amount of pressure in a game. You're not going to throw the same with two outs and nobody on as you will with runners at second and third and the game on the line. You want your concentration to increase exponentially. And how do I do that? You do that because it's explained to you by somebody who understands how to get it done. Most pitching coaches don't understand that. So having two guys, a division of labor, you take this side, I'm going to take this side, and we're going to take this guy and make him a better pitcher than he ever thought he was going to be. And the biggest factor is getting that guy to believe that you can make him into that with his help and the help of two guys who understand how to get there.
Yeah, I was fascinated by it. I'm glad that you were able to explain it a little further because it makes a lot of sense to me. Let's move over to the offensive side for a second. I feel like, and the statistics bear it out, if you look at Jose Abreu over the last seven games, two home runs, six RBIs, an on-base percentage of about 360, and he's slugging 560. When he clicks on, what is he doing well at the plate?
Well, first of all, people see that he swings his sliders in the dirt and curveballs in the dirt and fastballs out of the zone, and they say, oh, geez, boy, if he ever learned to lay off those. Well, guess what? If hitters always laid off those pitches, there would be no pitchers because you got to get them out some way, and that's a way to get them out. And Jose's going to go through periods where literally if the pitcher releases the baseball and it stays in the ballpark, Jose is going to swing. However, with the game on the line, he has a heightened sense of focus. He understands his job. He knows that he is paid to drive in big runs. And more times than not, he's going to find a way to get the job done because he understands his role. he knows that he's the man in the middle, the man tasked with driving in runs when the guys behind him don't, and that's what he's always done. You don't lead the league in runs batted in, which he did last year, without the ability to understand and rise to a situation. Jose just bears down a little bit more. The concentration gets a little bit better. You make a mistake when he's not swinging it well, he fouls it back. You make a mistake when he's really locked in and he hits it hard. And more times than not, it finds a hole, and sometimes it finds a place over the wall like he did last night when he took the game to 4-3, setting up Encarnacion to take it to 5-3 in another Sox win. So Jose is such a valuable member of this team. And when you understand that he wanted to come back so desperately that he told the White Sox, if you don't sign me, I'm going to sign myself. He took away every stitch of bargaining power he had because he could see what this team was going to be. And if he could see it, he paid his dues with some bad ball clubs. He wanted to be here as this team started their turnaround. And he could see last year, he could see the glimmers of hope. He could see the light at the end of the tunnel. He wanted to be a part of it. Consequently, here he is, a big part of it.
Stoney, I was talking with David Ross earlier this week about the Cardinals and the difficulty in scouting a team where you have so many people making their debut and it's kind of hodgepodge. So I'd love to know from your perspective, what's the hard part in dealing with a team? And this is a unique situation for both the White Sox and the Cubs over the last week where you kind of don't know most of who's on that roster.
Well, David's going to have and has had 5 games to figure it out. We played the Cardinals 3 games in 2 days. They had 7 players making their major league debut. But there is information on each and every one of these players. However, when you're dealing with pitchers you haven't seen before, it takes a while to take the video you might have on a guy and look at the scouting reports you have and then look at him from 60 feet, 6 inches and understand how to do it. That's why it's much easier to adjust to a starting pitcher who you might see a second and third time than it is to adjust to a reliever who you get one shot at. You don't know what his changeup looks like. I mean, you're seeing exactly what guys are encountering when they deal with Matt Foster. Matt Foster, a 20th round draft pick for the White Sox, has come in, set this league on its ear. Coming out of the bullpen, giving up nothing. His strikeout to walk ratio is laughable. It's in knocking in the neighborhood of 9-1 strikeout to walks. It's everything over the plate. They haven't seen his straight change. They haven't seen the life on his fastball. They haven't seen his deception. And right now he's sneaking up on a lot of people. So the challenge for Matt Foster will be when they have seen him a couple of times. Now, what does he show them? How does he show it to them? And how does he make sure that they don't get used to what he has? The real good pitchers, they don't care. You could have had 50 at-bats or 100 at-bats against Greg Maddux. He still knows he's going to get you out. And the thing is, you know that he's going to get you out. When you get to that point, you go to the Hall of Fame as Greg did. Matt Foster is in the infancy stages of what should be a really nice career. What I like about him is he's not afraid of anything. He throws everything over the plate. But that's the difficulty in adjusting to guys you haven't seen. And when you're dealing with the Cardinals and all of their problems with COVID and all of the young guys and the injuries they've dealt with, you're going to see many more young guys you haven't seen. But the Cubs wound up taking 3 of 5, which is something you have to do with somebody in your division. So they adjusted pretty well. And, you know, you get the kind of starting pitching that they've gotten most of the time, you're going to battle teams and you're going to get there. The Cubs are going to be in the playoffs. I mean, they're just too good a team not to be. Chris Bryant hopefully will come back because he loves to see the stars stay in the game. But, you know, if he really, and I think, Lawrence, just for his own good, if he wanted to rest this entire weekend to make sure he was entirely healthy, I can't see anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, really gear it up until maybe the last week of the season where they rest him for the playoffs and the last 3 games he's a non-factor. But I don't think anybody would second-guess David Ross if they kept Chris Bryant out of these 3 this weekend just to make sure, and again, preventatively, just to make sure he's entirely healthy as they move forward.
Yes, just want to make sure that he's all right. Give him his meat.
This is only for his own good, Lawrence. I'm pretty altruistic. I'm looking for the long-term Chris Bryant.
I like that. I think that is very noble of you to look at it that way.
Thank you. So, I'm selfless in that respect.
So later on this afternoon, the White Sox are taking on Detroit again, going for the 4-game sweep. Lucas Giolito on the mound. What corrections did he make from that first inning in his last start to, I thought, finishing off what was a really good rebound in that game.
Well, I think he was fighting his control the whole time. He was showing the inability to spot his fastball again. He wasn't getting ahead quite as much as he would have liked. I mean, it was reminiscent, although not as disastrous as his first time out against Minnesota, where literally he had no command of that fastball, and he really